All right, guys, we're in lesson 11 today. I've entitled it The Priesthood of Melchizedek. We're going to be looking at Hebrews chapter 7, verses 1 through 10. So I thought we've already talked about him, George. Yeah, well, he's going to go back to talking about him. And it has to do with talking about the superiority of Jesus versus going back to the old system. Remember, these Hebrew Christians were thinking about going back to the old Mosaic system, and they just want to talk about how he wants them to focus on who Jesus is and the superiority of Jesus. So he's going to do that with this discussion of Melchizedek. Now, let me start off with a question, not about Melchizedek, but why do you think people walk away from the church? Why do you think people walk away from the faith? Let's start the discussion right there. Okay, anger. All right, that's good, Sam. Why anger? What are they angry at?
Well, let's say something happened in their life that they wanted God to take care of, and it just didn't happen that way.
Okay.
Maybe according to his will.
Okay, so they're angry at God because he didn't do something. Okay. All right, and then I heard a couple of you others chime in. Rob, what did you say? Okay, not getting their needs met, and what were you going to say?
Disappointment.
Okay. All right. Misunderstanding God. Okay. All right. Anybody else? Why do you think people walk away? I'm not talking about why people don't believe. I'm talking about people walking away. And let's stop for a moment. I'm looking at a room with folks who've been at church a long time, okay? So surely through the years you have seen people who maybe were really active or whatever, and then boom, they were gone. And then they never show up again. And in fact, they don't ever talk about things again. They don't even talk about belief. They just kind of walk away. So disappointment, anger, misunderstanding. What else might you think about? Okay, Tammy. Okay, that's good. Did you hear what Tammy said? They're feeling like they will never measure up, okay? That they won't be accepted. Is that what you're saying? Okay, all right. Somebody else, why?
Legalism.
What's that?
Legalism.
Okay, yeah, they get caught up in legalism, and that doesn't necessarily...
People think you have to dress a certain way, or look a certain way, or talk a certain way.
And then that gets to be a burden after a while. Yeah. Okay, anybody else? The issue of sin and whatever they're caught up in is more important than, okay, faith. Okay? All right, that's good, John. Anybody else? Tim?
Sometimes it's other people. Like they get torn down by somebody else and it just hurts them so much they just walk away.
Okay, other people in church?
Yeah, other people in church.
Okay, all right, other people. Okay, so it's the action of others in church is what you're talking about. All right, so... When you said other people, my mind also went to, it could be the influence of other people as well. Not negative influence, but a positive influence. Like, do you really need to go? Do you know what I'm saying? Seriously, you know, do you need to go every Sunday? You know what I'm saying? You know, just kind of back off. We'll go do something together. We'll go fishing or whatever, you know. And before you know it, you quit going, right? You quit being a part of. All right, anybody else with a thought? All right, Mike. Yes.
Texas, yeah.
Okay.
And they just can't understand why loving God would allow like that.
Okay. That's really good, Mike. In fact, that kind of leads into what I'm going to ask next. And that is, do you think all these folks, Brad already mentioned it a little bit with his answer, do you think all of these folks have a misunderstanding of who Jesus is and what he's done? Do you think that's true? Okay? Because they either have some kind of concept in their mind, so with that, they walk away. So for instance, I was reading an article this morning when I was in my office. I saw a headline. How many of you know the television preacher Benny Hinn? I don't know that, not that you know him personally, but you know of him, okay? Benny Hinn was a prosperity theologian, okay, who for years basically said that if you gave money to him, God would multiply it in your life. And he made lots of money off of that. Here in the last 5, 6, 7 years, he renounced all that. He apologized and renounced that message. Now, the article I was reading about is back probably about back in 2017, 8 years ago, he picked a protege, somebody who would carry on the ministry after him. And it was saying about that guy didn't get the memo. And he's still using the old same techniques of money and so forth. Now, do you think that kind of stuff that's out there confuses people about faith, Christianity, and about God? Do you think it does? Okay. All right, Tim. Were you going to say something, Gene? Okay, that Satan wants us to be confused. Yes. Okay. Yeah, and see, that prosperity message, if you're told that you just have to have enough faith and you won't have any problems, no health issues, finances will be flowing out of your pocket. Obviously, if you don't have that and you're sick, there must be sin in your life and you must not have enough faith. You know what I'm saying? Which, by the way, as I'm looking around the room here, is that true for all of us here? We must not have enough faith, right? Because it's not just flowing out of our wallets, right? Now, if you believe that kind of message, eventually it's going to dawn on you that things aren't getting better and suffering is still a part of your life. Who do you blame then? Nobody's hunting Benny Hinn down. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's shooting a prosperity preacher. Who do they blame? And it's a misunderstanding about God, right? Misunderstanding about his message. Now, why am I bringing this up? As we get into Hebrews today, these folks that he's writing to are talking about walking away. Walking away from their faith. And walking away from Jesus. And a lot of it has to do with misunderstanding, that somehow they think the old system was better than Jesus. Did you understand what I'm saying? Better than what Jesus is offering, better than who Jesus is. They're not comprehending who he is. And I've come to the conclusion now, after pastoring over now 30 years, I find a lot of people, you know, they're saved, but salvation to them is I'm not going to hell and I'm forgiven. But it's not realizing who Jesus is. Jesus didn't, first of all, you hear people say, ask Jesus into your heart. You ever have, ever, or maybe you've even said that, okay? That's not in the Bible. Are you sure? Oh yeah, I'm very sure. Nowhere does he call you to ask him into your heart. That's our presentation. That's really not the gospel presentation. The gospel presentation is knowing who he is and deciding to follow him. It's committing your life to follow Jesus because you understand who he is. Who is he? The Son of God. The second person of the Trinity. The one who is the basis for everything being in existence, and so you decide to follow him. Do you understand? Now, the byproduct of that is I'll be with him forever. I'll be forgiven my sins. What were you going to say, John? Yes, yeah, that would be true. And I think it's, we compartmentalize it so much that, you know, Jesus, I'm only coming to you because I thought you would. Yeah, yeah, it kind of reminds me of a story I read about, you guys remember who Chuck Colson is? He was a great Christian leader before he died, but before that, he was Richard Nixon's hatchet man. He was in the Nixon administration. He was a lawyer, and of course, with all the Watergate stuff, you know, the thing that happened. Well, when he got saved, and he was in prison, he was in a federal prison, and he met an Italian mobster from New York, quote, led him to Jesus. And then after he got out, he heard later that this mobster went back into his old lifestyle, prostitution, drugs, all this stuff. So Chuck it's in his, one of his books he wrote, went to visit him in New York, and a guy said, oh, Chuck's good to see you, because they were in prison together. And then Chuck challenges him about, well, you know, you asked Jesus into your heart, you know, and you got saved, but yet you're still doing all of this. You know, you're not really supposed to be doing all of this. And the guy looked at him and said, Chuck, you asked me if I wanted to be saved, if I wanted to be forgiven, if I wanted to go to heaven. You didn't tell me that I had to give up all this other stuff. And had you told me that, I would have told you no. No. See, that's American Christianity. Now, I think it's because we don't really understand who he is. So let's talk about who he is compared to the old system. So let's look, first of all, verses 1 to 4 of chapter 7. For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, met Abram returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him. And to him, Abraham apportioned a tenth part of everything. He is first by translation of his name, that is, king of righteousness, and then he is also king of Salem. That is king of peace. He is without father or mother or genealogy, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but resembling the Son of God who continues a priest forever. See how great this man was to whom Abraham the patriarch gave a tenth of the spoils. All right, so let's talk about this. We're going to talk about the encounter, first of all, that Melchizedek had with Abraham. So Melchizedek was the king of the city-state Salem and a priest of the Most High God. Now back in these days, so you're talking a long time ago, probably 4,000 years ago, we didn't have nations with borders as we have now. Basically, they had city-states. These were fortified city-states. And there was a fortified city-state called Salem. And this guy, Melchizedek, was the king of Salem, but he was also the high priest or the priest of the Most High God. All right? So Melchizedek met Abraham as he was returning from the battle with the four kings. Now, in Genesis chapter 14, verses 18 through 20, here's what's recorded. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was the priest of the Most High God. And he blessed and said, blessed be Abram by the God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth. And he blessed, and blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand. And Abram gave him a tenth of everything. All right, so what do we see here? We see that Melchizedek blesses Abraham. Now remember the story of the slaughter of these kings? These were the kings that defeated Sodom and the cities of the plain, and they took away everybody there as captive, including Abram's nephew Lot. And because they had taken Abram's nephew Lot, he gathered a group of men who were with him, servants, and they went and attacked these four kings and slaughtered them. Now, if Lot hadn't have been taken, he probably would not have done this. But he did it because Lot, his nephew, was taken, and so he rescued Lot and all the people of Sodom, and he got the spoil. And on his way back, on his journey back, he meets the king of Salem, or Melchizedek, meets him and blesses him, gives him some supplies. And Abram gives him a tenth of all the spoil. Okay? Gives him a tithe. All right? Now, this message isn't about tithing. Some preachers will focus on tithing, you know, giving a tenth. This is not the writer of Hebrews' point here. He's not going to talk about you tithing. He's going to talk about Melchizedek. Okay? So let's talk about this now. So there was a gift. Abram gave a tithe or a tenth of all he had captured in battle. Now, why did he give it to Melchizedek? Anybody know? Real quick. Why? Why did he give it to a king? What was significant about this king? Remember, he's also a what? Priest of who? The Most High God. So he's giving a tenth of what he's received back to God. Okay. Now, let's talk about, in verse 2, the title. The name Melchizedek means King of Justice or Righteousness. Now, some people will say this is Jesus, a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus. Okay? I don't think that's what this is. Okay? I think this is a type. We're going to see that here in a moment. But I don't think it's the appearance of Jesus. Now, why would you say that? Whenever there is a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus in the Old Testament, people respond as they always do in terror because they think that they have seen God. And they have. That's not true here. Nobody's flopping on the floor, you know, doing that with Melchizedek. All right, now. He is also the king of peace, all right, because the word Salem means peace. Salem comes from the Jewish word, the Hebrew word, shalom. Shalom means peace, okay? Now, let's talk about his origin. Now, you're going to say, what in the world is this guy saying? Well, he's going to use a literary gimmick here to make a point, okay? So he's going to talk about where Melchizedek originated from. The writer points out that there is no genealogy or record of his death. So we don't know where Melchizedek came from. We don't know what his family lineage was. We don't know if he traces all the way back to Adam and Eve or Noah somehow. We don't know anything about him. We don't know nothing about him. The other thing is, we don't know anything about how he died or if he died. He did die, okay? Why? Because he's a human being. Okay, he eventually will die. But the writer is using a methodology here to say, we don't know anything about his origin and we don't know anything about his death. For all that, all we know is that he continues to live. Okay? That's the point he's going to make here. Melchizedek is a type of Christ in that his priesthood is forever. So he's using this literary mechanism here to say, because we don't know where he came from and we don't know if he ever died, his priesthood exists forever. And so he's saying this is a type of who Jesus is as a priest. That Jesus existed forever, right? And exists forever, and so is his priesthood. Now, you would say, that wouldn't work today, George, as far as an argument. You're right, it wouldn't. But we're talking about the argument 2,000 years ago, okay? In their mind, they would understand. Now, the issue here, okay, is the contrast between the priesthood of Aaron, which was dependent upon a genealogy. The priesthood of Aaron was dependent upon what? Descendants of who? Aaron. And as long as there was a direct descendant of Aaron, there would be a what? High priest. But Jesus is not from the priesthood of Aaron, right? He is of the priesthood, according to the writer of Hebrews, of Melchizedek, which, by the way, we don't know where he came from, and we don't know whatever happened to him. His priesthood is forever. That's the point he's making here. It's a superior priesthood. They say, George, that's a stretch. Yes, I understand it's a stretch, but do you understand what the author is doing? The point that the author is making is that Jesus is far superior than the old system, because the old system was based on the Levitical priesthood. And those guys died. But does Jesus die? Well, he died and he was what? Resurrected, right? And he will live forever. Okay? And lives forever. Do you see? This is the argument that he's making here. The writer calls the reader to consider the greatness of Melchizedek. He's obviously great. Superior. Well, superior to who? Well, it was to Melchizedek that the patriarch gave a gift. So that means Melchizedek was superior to who, folks, in the story? Abraham, right? Now, why would that be significant to a Jewish person? Yeah, Father Abraham. Abraham is the father of the Jewish nation, right? Yeah, he is the basis for everything. And so here you have someone who Abraham submits to, in fact, gives a tithe to. And it's this Melchizedek who is, Jesus is, quote, of the order of Melchizedek, is what the writer is saying. So therefore, Jesus is far superior than who? Abraham, right? Well, we already know that, right? But for the Jew who's thinking about going back to the old system, do you see what I'm saying? He's giving up what's superior for something lesser. Okay? Anybody got a question so far? You understand where he's going with this, okay? Now, let's look at verse 5 through 7. Here's what he writes. And those descendants of Levi who received the priestly office have a commandment in the law to take tithes from the people, that is, from their brothers. Through these also are descendant from Abraham. But this man who does not have a descent from them received tithes from Abraham and blessed him who had the promises. It is beyond dispute that the inferior is blessed by the superior. In the one case, tithes are received by mortal men. In the other case, one of whom it is testified that he lives. One might even say that Levi himself, who received tithes and paid tithes through Abraham, for he was still in the loins of his ancestor when Melchizedek met him. All right, this is, you're probably like, what in the world is he saying? Well, let's go through this, okay? This is all the argument about why Jesus is far superior than the old system. Okay, here it is. He's going to contrast some things. First of all, the Mosaic law required that the Levites collect a tithe from the children of Israel. I thought we weren't talking about tithing. No, but this is the point he's making here. The point is, the Levitical priesthood and the priest were to collect the tithe from the other 11 tribes to bring to the Lord. Now, the Levites received the tithe from the offspring of who? Abraham, okay? They received the tithe from the offspring of Abraham. Now, let's follow his argument. The writer points out that Melchizedek was not of the lineage of Levi. Would you agree with that? Yeah, that's at least three or four generations later, right? Because Abraham had a son. Who was his son? Isaac. Isaac then had a son, two sons, Jacob and Esau. Of course, Jacob was chosen. Then Jacob has how many sons? 12. Levi was one of those sons. And it is from the tribe of Levi that later Aaron would be selected as high priest, right? Okay, so that's way before. By this point, Melchizedek is probably dead somewhere, right? You're assuming. We're assuming that if he's a human being, okay? So the point is that he's saying here is that Melchizedek isn't from the lineage of Levi. Yeah, we know that. That's pretty evident. All right, now let's go on. He received Abram's tithe and blessed him. So he received Abram's tithe. Okay? That is Melchizedek. The writer presents the principle that the greater always blesses the lesser. The greater always blesses the lesser. In fact, look with me. I want you to see it just so you understand this is what the verse is saying. Look with me at verse 7.